This is F1 Debrief. They turned up with a tin shed. Coming up this week, we discuss all the action in Spa, the latest FIA investigation, and catch up with some awesome feedback.
Well, it's been a bit of a mixed up weekend, has it not?
That was quite the weekend.
All the people at the back suddenly came to the front.
I know, it was weird.
I vote, in honour of those people, we do the show in reverse. What do you reckon?
You want to do feedback now?
Feedback now, then housekeeping, then we'll do the race, then we'll talk about news, and then we'll do Good Week, Bad Week.
I vote no.
You don't think it'll catch on?
No.
Rats.
Good Week, Bad Week.
It's been a good week for Braun GP as the team have secured funding for the next 3 years at least. Although there's no word on who it is or what kind of sponsorship deals they've got, Nick Fry said there were no worries about the future anymore. This is good news for fans as the lack of title sponsorship has been of concern up until now.
And why haven't they announced anything as yet? Normally, when you say the money's fine, you prove it.
Maybe they don't want to scare off Virgin yet because they've still got them until the end of the season.
I'm pleased, but also curious.
It's been a bad week for theme park safety as Jonathan Noble of Autosport tweeted from Spa, "Just found out the Nürburgring roller coaster exploded recently after a pressure tank problem damaging a nearby hotel." At the time of the race, the roller coaster was struggling with safety certificates and things, so it's not a surprise really.
Okay, I suspect that must have been the hotel that's near the racetrack. There's one built beside the racetrack for the drivers, which is it's very lovely, and now it's got a big hole in it.
I hope there was no one in it.
That thing has just been jinxed from the start.
It's been a good week for FOM as they successfully got Abu Dhabi to agree to a later start time. The final Grand Prix of the season will start at 5 p.m, which Abu Dhabi are heralding as the first ever day/night race. They say there will be floodlighting around to ease the transition from day to night. It doesn't sound as organised as Singapore, though, and that worries me.
No, I'll tell you what, the problem is the sun's going to be going down at some point during the race and the drivers aren't going to be able to see. There's going to be, you know how hard it is to drive when the sun's going down, your lights aren't working because it's not dark enough for your lights to work, but it's too bright to really see properly. It's just going to be like that. We saw what happened in Melbourne when the driver struggled as it hit sunset. And the same thing's just going to happen there. So it's going to be lovely for us because it's going to look great. It's going to be a nightmare for the drivers.
It's been a bad week for Force India as they turned up to Spa with a ridiculous motorhome. It was basically a garden shed painted blue. Presumably, this relates to the previous problems they had with the owners of the motorhome who said they hadn't been paid for it. But it's a little bit embarrassing considering this is the weekend they get all the attention at last.
No one's actually clarifying exactly what's going on. I love the way that Force India have just not mentioned it. We'll just not mention that our motorhome's lost two stories. And now it looks like the multicoloured swap shop. It was mentioned in the comments that I think they were renting it off somebody, and there was also rumours that because of the close proximity to wherever the owners are, I think they may be near the border of Belgium, that there was a chance it might have got impounded, as almost happened at a previous race. So someone's been very naughty, and they've not been paying their bills.
News and views.
Suddenly, out of nowhere this week, although presumably because Piquet is no longer with Renault, the FIA are going to investigate the goings-on at Singapore last year surrounding the team's win.
Somebody holds a grudge.
Well, I don't blame him, really. Back then, in case you have a poor memory like me, Alonso was looking strong until qualifying when a problem with the car meant he couldn't set a time in Q2 and started 15th. Then, miraculously, midway through the race, his teammate crashed, brought out the safety car, which played right into Alonso's hands, and he won.
There was a lot of prestige around that race. It was a race a lot of people wanted to win. And I remember there was a great comment regarding Renault. I think it might have been on the Renault blog after the race, and it said the FIA can change the rules and they can take away our mass damper and they can do all the things they want to do, but they can't take away the team to win the first night race. And now they might even do that.
They might do that. At the time, it was a bit suspicious, but they won the next race as well, so I think that maybe took some of the heat off of it because it wasn't completely out of the question.
Yes.
But a spokesperson from the FIA said, "The FIA can confirm that an investigation is underway regarding alleged events at a previous World Championship race." So vague, you know, it's almost not worth saying anything, but...
Yep, at least they've noted that they've started this investigation. It's, you know, the rumours, it was rumoured originally on Brazilian TV, I believe. And was it Felipe Lite noted us in the comments that the suggestions were being made, and already the FIA are on it and they've confirmed that they are looking into this.
Yeah, so apparently fresh evidence has come to light, which is rumoured to be Nelson Piquet Sr.
Aha, and which is obviously, it's no coincidence that Nelson Piquet Jr. has gone away. And for a long time, we've been saying that the Piquets, they know where the bodies are buried when it comes to Flav and Bernie. And we were expecting something to kick off, and it looks like this is strike one.
This is quite a something. We did a bit of digging to uncover what was said at the time, and Tony Dodgins wrote an insightful article on Autosport with these important points. He said, nobody at Fuji wanted to say so on the record, but many teams thought that Renault had carefully plotted Alonso's Singapore win and were very suspicious that Nelson Piquet had crashed at precisely the right moment to trigger the safety car, which swung the race towards Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
He also said, on the lap after Fernando's stop, Piquet received a radio instruction, push Nelson. At the time, he was still stuck down in 16th position behind Barrichello's Honda, where he'd been from the start, so the instruction itself didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Coded instruction, it has been suggested. And finally, one team strategist I spoke to in Japan put it like this. Looking at it from a purely statistical point of view, on a track like Singapore, stopping on lap 12 is not aggressive, it's stupid. It's something which cannot work. Your grandmother wouldn't do it.
Right, but Renault managed to make it work.
They did it and they won from 15th.
And it was a lucky coincidence. It was lucky that Piquet crashed after Alonso had pitted and not before, because that would have ruined everything. So, I mean, I believe we actually covered this at the time. We suggested that this could have happened. It could have been true. And we're not in the least bit surprised that it's come out. I guess it is a little bit surprising that it hasn't come out sooner and that all these teams were suspicious that this had happened, but nobody could prove
nobody
it until
said
now.
Anything. Hmm. It seems odd because I don't know what they can do about it now.
I don't know. It's a kind of headache that Renault wouldn't want to be associated with.
No.
So you could foresee them, just the FIA investigation is probably enough to get Carlos Ghosn,
mm-hmm.
Who's in charge of Renault. I'm sure he'll be getting a little bit touchy about this being brought up. It's the kind of thing that might see the likes of Flavio have to leave Formula One. I mean, in the past, these kinds of things used to happen quite a lot, I suspect, but I don't know whether you can really get away with it in the modern era. And it will be interesting to see what penalties are given down to Renault. In the past, they have got away with a lot of things when it comes to the FIA investigation. If we can go back to the Spygate saga, they got let off incredibly lightly. So you could argue that actually it's going to come to nothing at all. However, the PKs obviously think it's worth bringing up.
But there's lots of conspiracy theories and things happening in the comments. So it's worth keeping an eye on there, because people are saying, well, maybe Max would want to push Renault out, or maybe Max would want to keep Renault in, because with Toyota possibly going as well, there'll be no manufacturers left, no
Absolutely.
Engines left.
There's not a lot of engines to go around if Toyota leave and Renault leave as well. BMW are already on their way out. It could be a Ferrari Mercedes championship.
So there's all sorts of things happening in the comments. It's worth tuning in.
Stephen Roy, one thing I did want to point out is Stephen Roy did say it was probably worth checking back to see if Renault have ever done this before. How many times has Alonso run incredibly light in the hope that Piquet would crash and cause a safety car? I don't know whether or not that's happened. It's probably the only thing you could really guarantee at a street track, but there's nothing to say they wouldn't have tried it previously at Monaco. But like we said, there's a lot of prestige to winning the first night race, and you'd be surprised to what ends people would go to do that.
The race.
So the race was a bit crazy, but it really started in qualifying, didn't it?
Qualifying was awesome this week. Loved it.
It's awesome
Loved
every week.
Yeah, but I really, really liked this one.
Only because everything was quite literally upside down.
It was the kind of thing you don't really want to miss. And when it comes to the end of the year DVD, it was the one you're going to go straight to. It's the most exciting session, I'd say, of the year. I really liked the one where everything went wrong and the live timing broke. But I would say this qualifying session even bettered that one.
Q3 went down pretty much like normal, except both Force Indias got out and into Q2. But that is where it all went wrong for the top runners, because Hamilton, Alonso, Kovalainen and Button all out in Q2.
What a surprise.
And
massive surprise.
We didn't really know why.
It was unexpected, and it was mostly down to tyre temperatures and the way the cars were working their tyres. And for some reason, all those teams got it wrong. They either picked the wrong tyre or they couldn't get the heat in. It just didn't work out for them, despite the fact you had running on Friday and you're running on Saturday in the morning. They still managed to get it completely wrong. We lost some of the main players. We lost Hamilton, and we lost Kovalainen, his teammate Kovalainen, and Button, all in one session.
Hmm. Suddenly BMW were quick, Toyota found pace, and then Fisichella got pole. What is going on?
Awesome. Loved the Fisichella pole. Loved it to pieces. Completely unheard of. I never saw it coming for one second. We thought he'd go light. He didn't go that light, actually, in the end. It wasn't like he was, he wasn't absolutely guaranteed that position.
We thought that he would be running really, really light and everything, but he wasn't the lightest man out there. And then we thought maybe someone else would get it on the last, you know, when the timer counts down to zero and everyone has their final lap, and we thought someone will beat him.
No.
Nope.
The cars, interestingly, the cars didn't improve on that final run at all. I didn't think anybody went any quicker. So I guess the tyres only had that one lap in them and they'd already gone away. All the track's conditions changed so much, but Fissi didn't have to defend. And it was all over. There he was on pole. Any idea how BMW suddenly managed to drag their cars to the front?
Well, no, I don't really understand what happened, except the fact that this, we're talking about Force India on pole, so anything could have happened.
I like seeing Toyota up there again. It was like the beginning of the year. And BMW, go them, because that's an incredible turnaround, despite the fact they're obviously already bailing out Formula 1.
Raikkonen was up there, though. He qualified sixth. Badoa was down at the back. Where would Massa be? That's the real question.
That is a good question. Just as the Ferrari finds pace, the guy's missing in action. That's he's just missed out on the best of the car's got to give. Do you think he'd do better than Kimi here?
I don't know if he'd do better than Kimi, but he'd do better than Badoa.
Yeah. As would anybody else linked with that driver. The question, I guess, is would anybody do worse than Badoa? I
think is Jack, that possible?
I think Jack Villeneuve would have a better chance of getting the car up there than that guy's done. It's a complete and unmitigated embarrassment for everybody concerned. I can't believe that Ferrari even let him turn up to Spa, let alone put him in a race car and send him out there to do a lap.
The only other thing of note, really, of qualifying is that the Red Bulls, they didn't do as well as we thought they might. This was supposed to be their circuit.
We knew that they wouldn't be quick in Valencia, and all the suggestions led to them being quick around a circuit like Spa, and it didn't really happen. Obviously, things were messed up in qualifying, but even in practice, it looked like they were struggling for outright pace. We thought they were sandbagging for a lot of it, but it turns out they just weren't as quick as we thought they'd be.
No, because we knew that Braun were going to struggle. They said they were going to struggle and that it probably would be Red Bull's circuit. And it just wasn't. It wasn't either of the teams.
No, not at all. It was the ones at the back.
Everyone else had a chance. So then we come to the race itself, and the start was chaotic, as you would imagine Spa to be.
Yes.
The first thing of note is that Barrichello went nowhere again.
We've seen this before this year.
Yeah.
Man puts it in gear, man goes backwards.
Nothing happens.
Good Lord. How can he not get it off the line?
Is it a driver thing?
I don't know. Jensen was fine. Barrichello just went backwards. I suspect it must be a driver thing. He's doing something wrong on the outlap.
He's not quite got to grips with the car, obviously.
Or gears. First, Rubens. First
gear required.
Anyway, I don't know quite how he's done it wrong again, but if not for the first time, Rubens Barrichello was sat there while all the drivers went past him, and he had to reset everything and then got going. And then he was fine once he got up and running. I suspect he's probably completely killed that gearbox. What do you think?
Everyone else did manage to get away. They went into the first corner and we had the usual crush there. Sutil went in like there were no other cars around him. He caused a little bit of chaos.
He cut up. Was a Williams, Alonso. Must have been Rosberg and Alonso.
Yeah.
Literally swiped across them as if they weren't there. Maybe he was a little bit confused as to where they were on the racetrack. He took a very, very tight apex into turn one, swiped across the both of them. I think Nico managed to survive unscathed. And did Alonso take a tap to his wheel?
Well, Alonso, yeah, sort of drove right into him or over him or something. And that wheel issue seemed to come up later. But at the time, it looked like he... He had also got through unscathed.
Bad Sutil because obviously damaged his own car. And it was a good car today. And he needed a clean start to the race. And he couldn't even manage that.
Maybe he was a bit overeager wanting to try and catch up to Fisichella.
Well, he had so much more fuel on board. He could have just played the waiting game. He had one of the largest fuel loads, I think, of everybody past. Well, pretty much everybody, I think. He was set to go a long way into the race. And yet, somehow, he got a bit hot-headed into turn one and bumped into a lot of people.
Kimi took the opposite action and went really, really wide to avoid everyone. And he really did avoid everyone because he jumped a couple of places at least.
Lots of controversy in the comments following the race. Do you think that he was pushed wide or do you think he drove off the circuit intentionally?
Well, I haven't studied it as much as you have, but either way, he gained some places and he really should have given them back. Even if he did it on purpose or if he was pushed wide, I still think they should have given them back.
Depending on where you freeze frame the video, you can either say he was fifth going into turn one, or you can say he was fourth, depending on where you take the point when everybody braked. He braked later than everybody, and therefore he was essentially past all of the front runners. Everybody in front of him, he was past them before the first corner because he went around the outside. He just drove clean off the track, never even attempted to turn that wheel to the right. There's not even a slight kink. Essentially, he just drove straight on, almost like he set out with that intention from the off. Because we've seen drivers do this in the past. I think 2007, Alonso pushed Lewis wide and Lewis managed to gain some speed on the outside of the track and almost brought himself alongside Alonso at Eau Rouge. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kimi didn't have that in mind, knowing that there was more pace on the outside of that track. It was dirty, you know, you go out there, you get your tyres dirty, but because you don't have to take, you don't have to slow down almost at all, you can take the a wide sweeping arc around the circuit. You gain both places, and whichever way you look at it, by the time he got to the top of Eau Rouge, he was, what, third? So he gained either one or two places by taking that route, and nothing was said of it. No penalty was forthcoming. Stewart didn't investigate because he's in a Ferrari?
Well, there is that, but also I think it was kind of forgotten about, because then suddenly four drivers were crashed into the wall and they probably had other things to think about, because then they decided to investigate that when that was clearly just a racing incident.
Yes.
And then they said they were investigating that after the race. No action was taken. But I think that probably wiped their minds clean of what Kimi may not have done.
Fair enough. Whatever happened, he came back on the circuit. He had a brilliant tow up Eau Rouge, and he passed Kubica before the next corner. So he passed Heidfeld into the first corner, and he passed Kubica before the next one because he had a tow and he had a curse button. And that worked out well for him. And that drew him up right behind Vissi before the safety car.
So the safety car came out because of these four drivers into the barrier.
Who were we blaming there, by the way? Is it just Grosjean? There's not really a discussion to be had, is it?
Well, Grosjean tapped button, and then so those two were flying off the track. Hamilton held back to try and keep out of it, and that confused not Seb. And so he went right into the side of Hamilton. And then all four of them were out. It was quite funny. Well, not funny, but Button and Hamilton, once they got out of their cars, they were both looking very put out because there was nothing they could have done about it. It wasn't their fault.
Well, Button qualified badly, which put him out of position and therefore into the clutches of Grosjean. And Hamilton, I think, as Brett just reminded me in the comments, Hamilton started badly and therefore he had a really tentative opening lap. It was almost the exact opposite of Sutil.
Couple of corners.
Half a lap. He started slowly. He obviously wanted to claw back the positions, but I would say he held back a little bit and it surprised I'll just worry because obviously he just came flying into the back of him. I would imagine he was slightly, he had his eye on Button and he didn't have his eye on Hamilton. And he's new, and you know he's got a lot to learn clearly. And unfortunately, Hamilton became the brake. He became the buffer to stop. I'll just worry and then put them all out.
So that brought out the safety car, and then when the safety car returned to the pit lane, Kimi, it took him all of about 2 seconds to get past Fisichella. It was obvious that was going to happen.
Made it look easy.
Yeah, I think it was easy.
Could Fizzy have done more? Did he not do a very good safety car restart?
I don't think he had a good start, but I don't think he would have held him up for much longer anyway. Kimi has Kurs as well.
It made all the difference.
Which makes it much harder to defend.
That was game over at that point, wasn't it?
It really was. Kimi led the way right to the end. Fisichella, on the grid, he said, I'm really just looking for some points. It would be a dream to get a podium. So he gets on the podium and he's all excited. And then afterwards he said, I really am quite sad that I didn't win.
Like, it would have been a dream to win.
Really, you just wanted to win then.
Understandable, yeah. I guess. It was a shame, really. It was the neither team managed to, Force India didn't manage to out-strategize Ferrari, couldn't manage to trick them. They're not used to this, obviously. They're not used to having all the media's eyes upon them. I would say that Fizzy did a great job coming in and out of the pits, and the team didn't mess anything up at Force India. We have seen, was it Fisichella earlier in the year when he forgot where his pit box was?
Yeah.
He just went flying on past it. So we know Fizzy has issues with the pit lane. So both teams did a really good job. There were no mishaps in the pits. In fact, the only person who had any trouble was Alonso.
In the pit lane, he came in and there was something wrong with his wheel. It took them ages.
Again?
It took them ages to change.
Was it a wheel spinner?
The tyre. Well, it looked like the wheel spinner was causing trouble, but it took them ages to change the tyre. He went out again, but it was not to be, because there looked like there was some damage from the first lap incident
yeah,
with Sutil. So it wasn't necessarily a wheel spinner thing, but there was issues going on there.
I bet the issue was exacerbated by that.
Probably. I mean, wheel spinners were not put in a good light this weekend at all, because Badoa's fell off in free practice Friday.
On his first lap out of the pits, it almost took, was it Glock's head off?
It didn't almost hit
it
Glock.
It nearly killed him.
He was there and it bounced near him.
We've seen bits of cars flying off left, right and centre this year, and somehow when a bit flies off a Ferrari into the face of Glock, no one's worried.
It wasn't into his face.
Well,
he was there.
Could have been.
It was dangerous though. I'm not defending it by any means. Wheel spinners really do have to go.
Yes, I know they're being banned for next year, but I can't see why FOTA can't just put their heads together and say, listen, they're not a vital component of the car. If we all lose the same amount of downforce, the same amount of aero benefit that we're gaining from these at the same time, if we just all agree not to use them, Formula One world will be a better place.
Alonso wasn't the only one having troubles in the pit lane. You have forgotten that Webber got a drive-through penalty.
That's completely slipped my mind.
He was let out into the path of Heidfeld in the pit lane and was given a drive-through penalty. And I think, I have to say, that must be the quickest steward's decision ever. It took about a minute and they were like, yep, penalty.
Yeah, unsafely sorted. Why can't they do that all the time?
I don't know.
We make the decisions in the comments. You see, you know, pretty much.
We're quite judgmental.
We are judgmental and we don't have all the information, but we gladly make those decisions for them. All they've got to do is read the comments and we'll tell them what's what.
We'll sort it out.
It's just been pointed out in the comments. Also, we forgot that Glock had an issue with his refueler in the pits as well. So it wasn't all plain sailing in the pits this weekend.
The one thing I was going to say, going back to Fisichella just for a moment, is that I assumed that he would just fall backwards. You know, he was on pole and I thought, well, okay, he's not the lightest man out there, but he's probably not got the pace to keep it up all race and he will just fall back through the field. But he didn't. He was right up there. He kept it on.
An incredible drive from him. And timely, wouldn't you say?
Really, really, yeah, good. It seems like India need that.
India? Because, yes, Falls India?
No, India.
Oh,
because
the country?
The country, because the government have decided that Formula One is not a sport.
Oh, they did jump feet first into that debate this week, didn't they? Do you think that they may have changed their minds this afternoon, this evening?
Probably.
Tomorrow they'll decide Formula One actually quite is a sport now that we're quite good at it.
They probably haven't actually, but it must do something, even if it's only a little, to endear the sport to them. Especially because, I mean, Malia had flags all around him. He had people following him waving flags.
Yeah, I'll tell you what though, budget cuts at Force India. At the beginning of the year, he had what you'd probably describe as paid attractive women following him. I've got to be careful how I put that. They are on the payroll and they are attractive and they wear scantily clad clothing. And they walk up and down the pit lane following Malia around carrying flags. Now, Richard Branson also had those when he came to the paddock and there was sort of a competition between who had the most attractive women with flags. Anyway, it seems like they've gone and they've been replaced with builders. Builders carrying flags around following Vijay. What's going on?
Looked like fans, actually. It looked
is
like
that what it was?
Yeah, because I wasn't sure that it was officially, you know, the Malia fan club.
Okay, but normally he has these people that follow him around to make him look rich and important, and they seem to have gone along with the motorhome. Of all the weeks,
I know,
of all the races to have a really, really
How
good result is the time when you've turned up with a tin shed.
So we don't know whether it will do Force India any good. It may or may not, but it won't have hurt Fisichella's chances of getting into the Ferrari, which is the big rumour.
Did he just pull his socks up because of this, or am I being cynical there?
Well, I don't think. I mean, as much as he wanted to pull his socks up, if it wasn't topsy-turvy and he didn't have the car under him, there wasn't much he could have done.
No.
But yeah, I'm sure it helped a little bit.
It gave him a little bit of motivation, isn't it? Do you think Ferrari would have given him the time of the day before Friday? Do you think this has changed their mind? Would one race have made the difference? Would they be that fickle to now call Fisi on Monday? Actually, he didn't do too bad there.
Did show him off in a really good light. I mean, I'm not a Fisichella fan, but I was impressed with what I saw today.
It was a good drive. He didn't make any mistakes. And he was on the podium with Stefanano. And so maybe, you know, maybe they exchanged words. Maybe it brought him into focus. There was another guy on Friday who was Nicholas Todd is managing. I forget what his name is now. Someone in the comments will tell us. But he was snooping around the garage on Friday and there was a lot of talk, I think, from Ted Kravitz in the pits that he might get the drive and he might be lined up for Ferrari, the Ferrari seat in Monza. We're pretty confident now that Badoa's not going to be in Monza, right? That would be embarrassing.
If they did that, that would be really
they
bad.
Need shooting,
yeah.
I think.
The good thing about getting Fisichella is that he is Italian, so that would work very well.
He's wanted that drive for as long as I can remember. Even when he was back in Jordan, he was trying for, was it in Jordan or Renault when he went for a test and he was lined up to have a Ferrari test. It wasn't even a drive in a race. He just wanted to be in the Ferrari once to say that he'd done it.
I've sat in a Ferrari.
And for some reason, the sponsors, I think it was a fallout because Renault wanted him in the Renault clothing and Ferrari said he's got to be in white and it never happened. There was a big disagreement back then. He's wanted it for pretty much all his life. It really is his dream. So I would like to see that happen just because that's what he's always wanted.
Would there be any resistance from Malia do you think?
Well, was
because when they talked to him today, I mean, obviously he's not going to say anything, but he said, well, I haven't heard from Ferrari, and as far as I'm concerned, he's my driver.
There was talk earlier in the week that Malia hasn't been paying, not only has he not been paying his motorhome bills, he's not paid Ferrari for the engines for last year either, or McLaren for the engines for this year, which is why McLaren may not be interested in supplying Force India with anything next year. So he could offer Fisichella as a means of paying off the debt. I don't think there'll be much resistance from Force India. And they've got, what have they got? They've got Liuzzi to step in as a replacement, and he'd probably do a perfectly not reasonable job as a standing driver. So I don't think they've got much to lose if that happened.
Vettel was also on the podium. He joined Raikkonen and Fisichella.
Good drive.
And that means that he has jumped Webber in the championship again. So Webber moved up to third in the championship after last week, but it's swapped round again now.
Yes.
Button is still in the lead. He's still got quite a good lead.
How lucky is that man?
Because afterwards, he said that really there's not that much need to feel down because he retired from a relatively low position. It's not like he was leading the race and then
that's
retired.
True.
So that was a good thing. And then also he's been quite lucky in terms of...
Quite lucky?
The other contenders.
I'm in hell. If I was him, I would be jumping for joy at the luck I had. I'd go and put my money on the lottery this weekend because nothing has gone wrong for that guy. Even when he's punted out of the race, what's he lost now from last week? 2 points in the championship now? Was it Rubens is his closest contender?
And 72 to 56 now.
His closest rival in the championship is his teammate who finished seventh and on fire.
He was
How
on fire.
How much luck does the guy have
That was weird, wasn't it? We didn't mention that for the last two laps, Barrichello was spewing smoke.
Yeah, it was pretty, but you just have to look and think, well, Jenson Button is going to, he's just going to walk the rest of this championship. He doesn't matter what he does wrong. Everybody else will do everything wrong around him.
Well, I don't mind so much now because at the beginning of the season, we were saying, oh, I don't want him to run away with it. And this is fine. I don't mind if he goes on to win from here, having built up that lead.
There is something very, very wrong with Formula One point system that nobody can catch the guy who doesn't even finish a race. I mean, I know that the
results.
But
it's only one race.
Yeah, but it's not. It's like the last race he managed just to what? He kept him. He lost to Rubens, but he kept in front of Webber and he didn't lose that many points. It just seems like it's so hard to catch up with somebody who's got a huge points
lead.
But
that's because he had about a million points lead.
That's true.
By the second race.
That is true, I guess. That is true. It just seems to me that it doesn't matter what anybody does. They can't catch him.
Don't tell anyone because otherwise they'll bring in the medals.
Yeah,
and
that's
we don't
true.
Want that.
No, well, see the medal. He'd still be winning on the medal system because we've had what was the stat somebody put in the comments earlier? Is it six different winners in six races?
Mm-hmm.
Every race is a new guy on the top of the podium. So even with the medal system, I don't think Button would be doing much better. But I just think that there's something rotten with the point system that when the guy, you know, the guy exits the race and nobody makes even a dent in his championship.
In fifth place, Brauntastic with 9408. Fourth, Rhino F1 Team 9462. Third is Demigods of Aeons 9706. Second, Celtic Racing 10788. And first, Couch Potato with 11499.
Oh, Kathy's lead has been cut.
It's also worth pointing out, though, that Kathy's second team are seventh.
That doesn't fill me with joy at all.
Before the end of the season...
Did you have to tell me that?
Before the end of the season, she will have two in the top five, I'm sure of it. I think it is going to happen. So, just like last week, Stephen Roy has delved out some facts for us. Cyclecast are leading the private leagues competition with 10,172.6 points, with Autosport second with 9,558.2. Hello F1 are in third and only 130 points behind Autosport. After breaking the 10K barrier last week, Cathy's top team reached a total of 11,499 points, although Celtic Racing took 201 points out of her lead.
Go Celtic Racing. She had a bad race.
We're catching her up. Well, I say we.
I think, did she say in the comments that pretty much the entire of her fantasy racers team was wiped out with the accident on the first lap?
I don't think it went well.
Just took them all away.
Hmm. My team, Cypodcast Racers, are in 113th and I got a score of 335. You are in 368th, which means you must have gone up from last week when you didn't have any drivers.
That was
drivers.
A poor showing last week. I did better this week.
Yeah, you scored 396 points. And that means you are 109 places behind Missing Montagny, who are in 259th. Now, that is my second team.
What?
You're 109 places behind my second team that I don't even look at.
What?
I know. I don't even know who's in that team.
What?
I think it might even have Bourdais in there. I'm not sure.
I am the worst person at fantasy races in the world.
True story.
Find anybody who's doing worse than I am. You have a second team, which is you haven't looked at since the start of the season,
mm-hmm.
which currently has a driver who hasn't raced for the last three races.
Possibly,
I'm
not sure.
You've got Massa too. And you're still ahead of me.
109 places. We've got some notes from other team owners. John said, yay, I'm back on the first page, top 25. Whoop, whoop. I can't pull that off. Force Honda B team are back in the game, in terms of my own pride, at least. Journey has said, Scuderia Emil Melia made a good tactical call by recruiting Kimi Raikkonen for Spa, but having Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso in the lineup hurt their points tally. Still, dropping only two places in the league standings minimises the damage for the team. The team are now looking at the potential Fisichella-Ferrari team-up with great interest.
Oh, I hadn't given that an any... I'm so rubbish at fancy races. That hadn't occurred to me until you just said it. Oops.
I didn't say it. Journey said it. Gavin said, Rubbergate... Yet again, Rubbergate Racing have had three drivers do well and three drivers do awful, except this time the drivers swap places. Stephen Roy said, Team Victory or Bust is up about 15 positions to 182nd, despite Lewis and Jensen being innocent victims of a coordinated attack by the two kindergarten drivers. That's a bit harsh. As predicted, Kimi won the race and little Seb got third, so his grounding for blowing two engines at the last race must have worked. Robert Kubica really impressed the team with his fourth position. And finally, Amy said, I have taken the decision as team owner to focus all resources on 2010, now that 2009 championship is out of reach. Clearly, this focus is working as I am leading the 2010 championship, even though we're not even there yet. So it's worth pointing out that there is sort of like a pretend 2010 championship to test out some new regulations. There's just a few people in there. I'm not sure we've mentioned that on the show because it's kind of a secret.
You can find it in the menus in Fantasy Races if you're interested. And Amy's leading it now.
Feedback. Firstly, we've got a voicemail and we should have played this in the parade lap this morning, but things were a bit chaotic then, so we didn't. And we want to play it now because although it is predictions, it is really funny.
Sorry, podcast. It's Sliggy here. Sorry about the voice. It's very croaky and I think it's turned into a robot, but more on that later. I'm just wanted just to... Well, today, qualifying, Fisichella, the 97-year-old Force India driver, getting pole. What on earth? But how cool was that? I forgot what's going on. Ah, yes, my prediction is for the race tomorrow. Basically, it's obviously going to be, a topsy-turvy race. I mean, Fisichella's on pole at the age of, and what did I say, 97? Wait, 106 now. Never mind. So, my predictions for race tomorrow are as follows. The winner will be Sutil, just to annoy Fisichella, of course. Second place will be Luca Badoa, driving the 999 car, whatever he drove, at Spa. He's so slow, he's 10 years behind us. That's quite incredible. Third will be Luca Badoa in the Ferrari, in some kind of crazy Badoa-ish Doctor Who spin-off. It's going to be an incredible race. It can't be anything but... I mean, the last race was Valencia, and this race is Spa, so, you know, it could be just a mouse running around for 10 hours, and it would be better. Well, I mean, the Rubens win was good, but, you know. Never mind. So, yeah, see you in the comments. Let's hope that Luca Badoa doesn't go too slow. He actually might go back in time. That's a scary thing. He's so slow. Wow. Anyway, I'll see you later. Bye.
I like that. A mouse could be running around the track and it would be more interesting than Valencia.
Yes, he's absolutely right. And it was an incredible race. So thank you for those predictions, Licky. And please do keep your predictions coming via voicemail and we will play them on the parade lap. Or if we forget, we'll play them in debrief.
Next, we've got an email from Chris with a K who has had a look at the regulations for us. He says, good afternoon, Sidepodcast. I'm watching FP2 and I've been doing some rule digging. Looking at Vettel's uncomfortable engine situation, I decided to take a look at the engine regulations because I reckon there might be a handy little loophole. I was reckoning that Red Bull could put fresh engine number 9 and number 10 in Vettel's car at the same race, thus getting him enough engines to last the rest of the season, barring another disaster and only getting one penalty. The good news for Vettel is that it appears that my workaround could actually yield 3 fresh engines for 1 penalty thanks to this rule. 28.6. For the purposes of this article only, an event will be deemed to comprise P3, the qualifying practice session and the race. So breakout engine number 9, for P3, engine number 10 for qualifying, and engine number 11 for the race. Vettel does one race at the back of the grid, so pick a circuit that you can overtake at or a wet race, and three shiny new engines. Problem is, I'm not entirely sure how to interpret the wording of the important bit of the engine regs, 28.4. Each driver may use no more than 8 engines during a championship season. Should a driver use more than 8 engines, he will drop 10 places on the starting grid at any event during which an additional engine is used. Now, does that mean you get a 10 place grid penalty at any event that you introduce a new extra engine, or is it on any event that you make use of any of the extra engines? All the pre-season coverage made it sound like the former, in which case my loophole stands. The latter, however, not only closes my loophole, but makes Vettel even more screwed than I first thought. Maybe it's worth a mention come debrief time.
I like it. Thank you, Chris. So, you bring in 2 new engines, but you only take a penalty for 1.
Yeah, well, if you bring in an engine for each session that you can over 1 race weekend and take the penalty there,
yeah,
then that's good. That's his loophole. But that's it. Depends if they take that into account at every race and they know that you're using engine number 11 later on as well. You might get a penalty there.
Yes. I'm going to throw this up into the comments and see if anybody else before the end of the show can come up with any reason why this wouldn't work. I think it might work and it would be worth doing. You take the one hit, but you get your engines and you don't have to manage the life of them. I don't know whether it's really within the spirit of the rules and whether Potter might have some kind of issue with it. But from the wording of the regulations, I interpret it to be the same way that Chris does. And it sounds like he might be able to get away with that one. What does anyone else think? Andy in the comments says, the regulation is clear. You get a grid drop for every race you use an additional engine. Okay, so that's no use at all.
So the loophole is closed.
Yes, that pretty much knocks it on the head. So that every time he uses engine 9 or 10, he just gets a grid drop regardless.
Also, Lukey said, Fota always seem to have issues if someone uses a bit of their brains, to be fair. So they probably would take issue with that.
The boy has a point.
My next email comes from Bassano. Now, do you remember last week we said that he was celebrating his side pod anniversary? I don't know how to say it, really.
Side podversary,
where he had been commenting with us for a whole year. Well, now he's sent us some thoughts about it. Hello, Christine and Mr. C. I thought I'd drop you a line or two with some thoughts on reaching my 1 year side podversary. I was a regular podcast listener for a while when I decided to join you in the comments. As mentioned last week, I'm pretty sure it was Valencia making my first weekend of live commenting. Initially, I found it odd because there was no live TV feed available that was without delay, so I stuck to the comments for the practice and quali sessions. I'm so glad I did. In that year, I have discovered that Side Podcast is oh so much more than an F1 related audio item in iTunes. It's a family. The last year has had some huge highs and some desperate lows, but enough about Mr. C's hangovers. I've attended F1 technology lectures, exhibitions, and the odd social gathering. Yes, real people. My understanding of F1 has grown immensely, and I thought I was fairly well clued up before. Uniquely, Sidepodcast is a website where rudeness, ignorance, and childish behaviour is not entertained. No question is seen as stupid, and sometimes your DIY solutions appear right on your doorstep. Anyway, I just wanted to say, next time you hear Christine say, I'll see you in the comments, try it out. We can't promise we'll be on topic, but you won't be bored or alone. Yours, Bassano.
I heart that.
How sweet is that?
That's perfect. That sums it up really, really well. Thank you, Bassano. And we've got to do more with the Sidepodversary because I like the concept. I think everybody should have a Sidepodversary from the first time they started commenting.
We can find out people's first comments, yeah. And we can celebrate.
We know this information. Lots of it's already in the wiki. And we should celebrate those days. And we should make them special.
Well, in the comments, Chris has just said, just found out when my side podiversary was. It was today.
Oh, my goodness.
Parade lap Spa last year.
I didn't even know we did a parade lap for Spa last year.
Well, we did. And that has been a whole year since Chris joined us.
Learn something new every day. Thank you, Chris.
That's awesome.
So we shall celebrate that this evening.
It's hard to follow such a great email, but we might be able to do it with this one. This is from Saad Pervez. I hope I've said that right. I probably haven't. He said, hi, would like to thank you and Side Podcast community for helping me stay in touch with all things F1. I was, until recently, on a lecturing stint in, of all places, Iran, where it was impossible to find a TV channel that showed anything F1 related. I was down to watching the official timing screen for several races, and because of the Leviathan filter through which all internet traffic passed through in that country, that often meant lagging live timing with bursts of updates coming in together and plenty of that been left out again feeling. From the moment I found Side Podcast, I became a follower. Because of strict censorship, I wasn't much of a participant, and knowing that I was under surveillance prevented me from taking any risks by making any posts or comments, lest I get blocked from accessing the site altogether. But the debriefs and digests were a lifesaver. They really made a huge difference and kept me looking forward to the next race or practice session. Big, big thanks for doing what you guys do.
Anytime.
Back in Karachi, it's good to see Sidepodcast in action alongside the TV coverage we get here. Live commenting works to provide something of an alternative to the often lamentable commenting of ESPN Star Sports and a proxy to the commenting on other channels. This time around, there were really useful graphics showing everyone's weights post-qualifying.
You did that.
We'd love to see more technical and tactical discussions during live commenting, as the TV commentators are often just trying to keep up with the action and correct each other's mistakes. More often than not, the official live timing can tell you what is going on before the commentators catch up. On live chat, with 6 to 7 comments coming in every 10 seconds, you get the feeling that you are connected to a swarm of eyes witnessing and interpreting live events. Wish you guys well for the future. I hope to be dropping in the odd comment here and there. Do let me know if you find them useful. Take care, Saad Pervez, Karachi, Pakistan.
That's another great email. Thank you.
That's awesome.
And I saw Saad in the comments today. So yes, he joined us again today.
Which
and
is
lots
excellent.
And lots of great comments. One thing we are working on that sort of come to life this weekend is the Fact Bite Fact Box.
Yes.
Which has been promised for a while. It's still not what we intend it to be, which is a live updating swarm of information. Sort of facts about the race and stuff like that. At the moment, it's pretty static, but it will update on a race-by-race basis at least. And possibly there is an opportunity that maybe we might be able to provide more technical insights to what's going on the race, and get assigned people to watch a certain driver and update. You still comment the way you comment, but you might be able to feed information into the Fact Bite Fact Box about a certain driver if it's a fact. So if you know a certain fact about something, you can put it there, and otherwise you just comment in the general discussion. So that's something we can think about in the future.
It is very true what Saad says though about the fact that you've got lots and lots of people watching the same thing, and all the information, we've said this many times before, that's what makes the live commenting so great.
Many eyes.
Is that especially when, if an incident happens, or for instance like the Raikkonen thing, everyone saw it, and lots of people see it differently, but it creates great discussion.
It does. And the post-race discussion today was great. Obviously we were talking a lot about Kimi and various other aspects, but just to have people there before the race gets going, and so you know other people are just as excited about it as you are, and to have people around afterwards to discuss it with is absolutely great. I couldn't watch Formula One without it.
Now we have one final voicemail, and it has nothing to do with Formula One at all. That's why we've left it to the end.
Is it about cookery?
No.
What is it about?
It's about IRL.
Ah, okay.
Because last week we live commented a race with Frank Montagny in it. He didn't do very well, and I don't really want to talk about it.
But I think he did really well, actually. I think to the untrained eye, he didn't do very well. But it was Stephen Roy pointing out that he was like the third fastest lap in a car that he has never driven before on a circuit that I don't think he knows that well.
I still love him either way, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, we had a voicemail last week from Dan, who was very kindly offering information, questions, to take questions for the IRL. Now, obviously, we've missed it, but I thought it would be good to play it anyway because Dan sounds really nice.
Okay.
And we may have to live comment something in the future.
Hi, Slide Podcast people. This is Dan from Japan. And actually, this is really exciting for me because at the end of your last little podcast, you put out that feeder to find more about IRL. So my Americanness finally comes in handy. This is really exciting for me. This is also my first voicemail, so I'd like to say thanks for having this open. If you want to know more, IRL does not mean only in real life. It's very exciting. It is also the Indy Racing League. So this is roughly about a 13-year-old series that was one of the results of the split between CART and the Indy 500. This is, of course, what ended up winning. And, well, what can I say? Just about all of the major open-wheel action in the U.S. goes on in the IRL. For example, it does do races apart from the United States in other countries, including Japan, where in the Twin Ring Motegi race, Danica Patrick, go figure, won her first race. In addition, it's very exciting because the upcoming race just happens to be a stone's throw from my house back in California. So if you'd like to know any more, please send me an email and I'd be happy to type up a little thing for you. Direct your questions to me. Thanks a lot for always putting out an awesome podcast, and I hope to comment a bit more this way in sort of a real life way in the future. All right, bye.
I love Dan for that voicemail, but the thing is, he was in Japan when his house was like inches from where Frank was. This is no good to me.
Yes, I like the way that in the future he's going to comment in real life in the future. Does that mean IRL or in real life?
IRL.
I'm so confused now. But no, I think we need that information from Dan. I will say that the live timing information provided to fans of IRL is light years ahead of what Formula 1.
Our broadband actually couldn't cope with it.
No. We obviously run screens each, and there are five simultaneous video screens. You can choose whatever camera you want and run little mini cameras at the bottom.
And there are two of us, so that's 10.
We had 10 video screens running for IRL. It just completely broke. There is so much data and so much detail. You can do driver comparisons and you can call up stats. We watched Frank turn the wheel. There's like a simulated wheel on screen.
I could see what gear he was in. It was proper stalkerish. I loved
left,
it.
He's turning right. He's got opposite lock on. It's just madness the amount of information that IRL provides compared to what we used
for
to
free.
In Formula 1. Completely for free. Obviously, we signed up for nothing because we only watched one race. I was utterly bowled over by it. If it was the dullest race in the world, I would be happy playing with a live timing console all evening. I never got bored of flicking, changing, adjusting, tweaking, zooming in and zooming out. And it's just unbelievable amount of detail. I loved it to pieces.
The next thing Frank is going to do is Petit Le Mans. So we'd better live comment that.
Oh, yes.
Except... it's actually on the same weekend as Singapore, which is a bit of a
busy weekend.
Problem. Yeah.
And the weekend after SciPod Radio, which is a really busy weekend.
Yeah, I mean, our schedule seems to be next week is free. We may or may not do a show, depends how what the news is like.
Yep.
Then it's Monza, then it's SciPod Radio, then it's Singapore/Petit Le Mans.
Good stuff. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a busy month.
Action-packed end to the season.